This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. San Antonio has a number of unique public health challenges, but the good news is many of them are preventable. We've seen that with the reduction of smoking, a campaign educating people about the danger of tobacco use, along with public policy changes to eliminate secondhand smoke, has resulted in fewer people addicted to nicotine and smoking, and a reduction in those related cancers and respiratory issues. So what if we were able to do this with other health problems that we have, like diabetes and obesity and teen pregnancy, STDs and infant mortality? Well, it can be done, but we need leadership with vision and a whole bunch of other qualities that are just so difficult to define. We just need that right person. And now we're going to see if we got that right person. San Antonio has a brand new leader at the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District. It's Dr. Colleen Bridger. She is taking over now the seventh largest city public health agency. And so what do you want Dr. Bridger to know about San Antonio's health situation? She's new here. Give her a call. Tell her, welcome in. Here's what you ought to know about San Antonio and public health. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource at tpr.org. And you can tweet us at tprsource. And Dr. Bridger, welcome to The Source. It's great to have you here in San Antonio.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
So you join us from North Carolina. Talk about your experiences there and what brought you to San Antonio.
So I have been a local health director in North Carolina for 20 years in, by North Carolina standards, a small, medium, and large county. And most recently was the health director in Orange County, North Carolina. Go Tar Heels. That is the home for UNC Chapel Hill.
Right. And you were recognized there. You won awards as being the top health director for the state. And what were some of your big accomplishments there?
So I was Health Director of the Year, and that's a really cool award.
Was that twice?
Because it's, no, just once.
Okay.
But that is an award given by peers, so that's folks that work with you day in and day out, so that was really special. We also, the various health departments where I worked, we had some really great success with innovation, and so we won a number of awards specific to some of our innovative projects that we rolled out. Some of those were, we were the first health department in Orange County, we were the first health department in the state to offer naloxone, or Narcan as it's known, through the health department without a prescription.
Now that's the miracle drug that if you have someone who's overdosing from heroin or opioids, that immediately negates the effect of the opioids on the system and it can reverse an overdose.
That is correct. And the key to naloxone is you need to have it in as many people's hands as possible because it must be given as quickly as possible in order to prevent the respiratory arrest, which is what kills people during overdose.
Right. It's and that's part of the harm reduction mentality that's taken over a lot of parts of the country. Massachusetts has been on the forefront of that. Texas, not quite so, in trying to get naloxone into the hands of people who could actually administer it right when you're having people ODing right in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of take them to the ER and maybe they might have it, you know. So you're going to try and do something about that here?
Well, perhaps. We're going to be looking at... We're going to look at the data, and then we're going to look at community priorities, and we're going to try to figure out, you know, what are the most important 3 to 5 health issues that we can work on at MetroHealth right now. And then, you know, every couple of years, we'll revisit that list and see what we can work on.
So what did they tell you when you were you recruited? Did a headhunter bring you over here? How did you end up in San Antonio?
So I did work through a headhunter. And obviously, San Antonio is a really cool city. And so there was a lot of talk about how much fun it would be to go live in San Antonio. But there was also talk, you know, the MetroHealth is a national leader on many issues. And so that was really intriguing. And the opportunity to be able to have some of the scale that you need to try some novel interventions in a city as large as San Antonio and Bexar County too, was a real draw.
Getting into public health, you become a doctor and you have a lot of choices ahead of you and a lot of bills to pay. medical, school bills and things. How did you decide that this is where you were going to, go?
Okay, so just to clarify, I have a PhD.
Okay.
I'm a PhD doctor. Public health has always been what I've been interested in. From the thesis that I wrote in my undergraduate school was about HIV prevention in Uganda, to then my master's degree of public health and maternal and child health, and then finally the PhD in health services research. So I've known from a very young age that I was interested in root causes. So you get to that point when you're in undergraduate school, am I going to medical school or am I going to do something else? And for me, that something else needed to be more population focused and less individual focused, because I could clearly see that if I wanted to be able to move the needle on these health issues, that needed to be done at the population level.
And what about your, when did this resonate with you personally? Like, when did you see something that's like, yeah, public health, I can make a difference?
So the first thought that came to my mind was I was in undergraduate school and I was leading the charge to have condoms available in the dorm areas. They had condoms available at the school nurse place, which was, halfway across campus. And so a group of us came together to advocate for condoms being distributed more in the places where they might be needed rather than someplace that you had to go fetch. So that was my first experience with kind of thinking about that, putting services where people need them and the importance of educating sexually active college students on how to use condoms.
And where was that?
That was in Vermont.
Okay. And was there any sort of like, oh my gosh, this woman is going to be putting condoms all over the campus?
There was a lot of that. Yes, there was a lot of pushback. So that was a really good experience for me. I have lessons from that I still use today.
And when your experience with poverty? In North Carolina, there's poverty. Similar to San Antonio's or different or comparable?
Well, I like to think about poverty in terms of pockets of poverty or places in all places, whether you live in a rural community or an extremely metropolitan area like San Antonio. There are always places where people are struggling to make ends meet. And so that was a focus when I was in Orange County, which is a fairly affluent county when you look at just the statistics countywide. But then when you look at 20% of the population, and I believe that's what it is here in San Antonio as well, struggling to make ends meet. So yes, you've got to be able to target your services and interventions to areas where there is high poverty, because that's where you're going to make the biggest difference.
We're talking with Colleen Bridger. She's taking over the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District. She is responsible there for implementing policies aimed at improving the health of the population here in San Antonio and Bexar County, and managing nearly two dozen programs, including WIC, vector control, that's for the mosquitoes, air quality, STD prevention, tuberculosis, all sorts of issues that we have to deal with here in San Antonio. We've got to do some triage here. What will come first? What do you want her to tackle first? What do you want her to know about San Antonio? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this break. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about San Antonio's public health. Public health critical here. We have pockets of big poverty here in San Antonio. We know that we have an infant mortality problem. We've got a huge diabetes and obesity problem, teen pregnancy. Take your pick. Lots of issues. We need some leadership in figuring out how are we going to communicate to the population at large, how to adopt these measures that could actually reduce these issues in their lives and prevent some of these major health issues. Give us a call if you want to talk to our new director for San Antonio Metropolitan Public Health, Colleen Bridger. The number is 210-614-8980. So, Colleen, what do you want to take on first? I mean, are you looking around, taking a survey? Are you going to look for the low-hanging fruit? What's the strategy?
So it's probably going to be a combination of low-hanging fruit and the most critical public health issues for San Antonio and Bexar County. And you will probably ask, well, how do you identify those most critical issues? And we just finished the community health assessment for the health department. And so we have data about what's important. And I believe we've identified 17 different things. So we need to narrow that down into 3 to 5 items that we can really focus on and really start to have a full court press. I mentioned Go Tar Heels, right? So full court press.
Don't say that again.
And
I can hear the radios clicking off.
I'm sorry. So
you can say Gospers Go.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Moving on.
We need to look at things that are driving some of the reasons why people aren't as healthy as they can be. And one of those things is infant mortality, because while the fact that we are having infants dying is a terrible, terrible thing, the other problem with infant mortality is when you look at infant mortality rates, it is as much an indication of how healthy our women are before they get pregnant as it is an indication of how well they did with prenatal care. So infant mortality is one of those indicators that shows us more than just what's happening to these babies. It's showing us that our women are not healthy in San Antonio and that we need to figure out how to make them healthier before they start having babies.
Now, when we talk about infant mortality, a lot of people automatically assume that we're talking about really poor women who don't get the prenatal care and they don't have a doctor. And that's true. It happens in there, but it also happens across the population as well. It's not just, the pockets of poverty. This is something that is system-wide.
It is system-wide. What we see, however, is that African Americans and Hispanics have higher rates of infant death than whites do. So, and that controls for income and education. So when we start thinking about targeting some of these interventions, what that tells us is we need to make sure that our African American and our Hispanic women are getting the preconception care that they need in order to be healthy, that they have their diabetes under control and their weight is healthy.
Right. But it's all sorts of demographics as well. It is really bad in those areas. I mean, specifically really bad in those areas, but we can invest in this and this will have benefit for everyone in the city. All women should have the right to give birth in the most healthy of circumstances.
Yes, absolutely. And investments that we're making in our parks, for example, are ultimately going to help our infant mortality rate, because women will feel safer and they'll have more opportunities to get out and walk and get exercise, which controls their weight, controls diabetes, is great for mental health issues as well.
And also creating a culture where postpartum care is just routine.
Yes. And not just postpartum medical care, but postpartum supportive services like more time at home with the baby for mom and dad, as well as more opportunities for breastfeeding, for example, having easy access for women to be able to breastfeed no matter where they are is also a really good way for mom and baby to be healthy postpartum.
And the training for that, it's not just like easy peasy lemon squeezy kind of a thing. You do have to do some training.
Yes, absolutely. Breastfeeding is very natural, but it also requires a lot of, as you say, education and support, especially for first-time moms.
Okay, let's get a caller on the air. Michael has called in. Michael, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, welcome to San Antonio in Texas. We always want to give a big welcome when you come here. My question was this, we have a lot of people kind of falling through the cracks. They're not quite a Medicaid appropriate yet, or it's called Medicaid pending. And so these people either getting on services, they tend to fall through the cracks, and of course they're going to be hospitalized. But once they do leave the hospital setting, there's nowhere for them to go, and of course then they return back to the hospital. So I don't know if that's something that you might be able to maybe take a look at and see what options there are. There are some there are some nonprofit organizations that are trying to get established and get some funding to try to become that safety net. Are you willing to work with organizations like that?
Oh, yes, definitely.
So Michael, describe how that would work, a safety net would work.
Okay, so basically, I'm in the healthcare field. And what I've seen is everyone is going after the Medicare insurance dollars, the Medicaid dollars. But there's some money out there that no one's really ever looked at, and that's the foundation money. Like, let's say, Methodist Ministry, St. Luke's Ministries, Catholic Charities. And we have the Santikos. I don't know if you're aware of our Santikos Theaters. Was given the $600 million grant. And of course, and they're doing wonderful jobs with that money. But it's for myself, I did start this 501c3, and the idea of it is this, is that these people that fall through the cracks, they're in between, they're in limbo. So they're waiting for the Medicaid to come into place. They're waiting for different insurances to take place, which could take 30 days, 90 days, or a couple of months, or a waiver program. And so what the idea was to take some of this foundation money and pay for a bed in assisted living, which the IRS agreed to, and have that provider say, okay, if we're going to pay you the difference between what they make the SSI, you put a roof over their head, you feed them, you give them the three meals, put a bed, and even take some of that money and pay for a physician to go and do the basic, you know, where they can write orders for basic prescriptions.
Okay.
Pay for that, and kind of just kind of carry them through that transition period.
Okay, Michael, I think we got it. Thank you for that call and bringing that to light. I mean, this is one of the many things that people will be bringing to your table and saying, hey, take a look at this, but you're going to have to decide what's going to get the big attention, right? Or do you have to be the guy on Ed Sullivan spinning all the plates at once, or are you going to do what?
Well, a little bit of both, I think. What we've talked about at Metro Health in the less than a month since I got there is we need to make sure that we have priorities, and we're constantly focusing on those priorities. But we also need to have a list of things that are on the plate. And if there is a group in the community that wants to work with us on it, then we need to be able to capitalize on that opportunity and that momentum moving forward, because whenever we can work with the community to address an issue, we are much more likely to succeed.
Okay, another caller, Christopher. And Christopher, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. Welcome to Dr. Bridger. I'm a medical student at UT Health San Antonio. I've actually had the opportunity to work with Dr. Junda Wu, one of your colleagues at Metro Health, who's wonderful. My question is in regards to the efforts Metro Health is making to reach out to the LGBT community in San Antonio, particularly in light of our city's high rates of HIV, syphilis, and other STI infections. I'm interested in the efforts that you have ongoing at the moment and where you see that going in the future. Thank you.
All right, Christopher, thank you for the call.
So, yes, thank you very much for the call. That's a super important issue. I do know that I have seen some documentation come across my desk that mentions an LGBT health fair that we are doing in the near future. So I'll try to get more specifics about that, but I know that that's coming up. And you hit on a really important issue, which is HIV and syphilis infections especially, and the fact that nationwide we're seeing an increase in syphilis, and that if you have syphilis, that puts you at a much higher risk for HIV. And when you look at data for Bexar County and Texas compared to the U.S., so Texas is pretty typically higher than the U.S. average when it comes to all STIs. And then Bexar County and San Antonio are pretty typically higher than Texas. So we have a real problem when it comes to STIs. We're making some progress. So for the last couple of years, those numbers are coming down slightly, but we are still higher than Texas, which means we're still higher than the national average. And that is an area that we really need to focus on, not just for our LGBT community or our MSM community, but also for our teens who may not be as comfortable with using condoms to reduce their risk with their sexual activity.
And we have congenital syphilis babies being born in San Antonio at a higher rate than we would normally see around the country.
Yes. And again, that number is coming down slightly. We can't tell if that's the beginning of a trend or just a blip. But whenever you have high rates of syphilis, you're going to have higher rates of congenital syphilis. And that's something we absolutely need to address.
And now we're trying to actually test for that before the pregnancy advances too far along and be able to treat that and trying to avoid infants being born with this condition.
That is correct, because if we can identify mom has syphilis during the pregnancy, we can treat her, and that will prevent the infant from being born with congenital syphilis.
So do we have to encourage young moms to ask, can I please be tested if they even have the slightest suspicion that they might have it? You know, they got, or is this something that's becoming routine?
Both. And again, back to that preconception issue, half of pregnancies are not planned, so we need to make sure that routine testing for syphilis is happening for everybody who's sexually active, to make sure that if they are one of those half the pregnancies that are unplanned, that they're routinely getting the testing and don't end up going for their prenatal visit and finding out that they have syphilis. But most important, get your syphilis testing during your prenatal period.
And we've seen in the previous health department administration a outreach program to try to deal with sexually transmitted diseases in the LGBTQ community. Is that going to continue?
Oh, absolutely. We've got a wonderful mobile van that goes out to communities to provide testing close to home, which is a really innovative model that San Antonio has started. And I totally want to continue that.
And there's a lot of concern about maintaining privacy during these types of vans, reaching out to the community, trying to administer help, but also maintaining confidentiality.
Yeah, and so, you know, that's why we have multiple options for people who want to get STD testing. They can come to a regular clinic and go in there and nobody knows why you're going through those doors, and that's a high level of confidentiality. They can also go to the van, and that's an easy access but a little lower confidentiality.
So is this like a van? Is it like dressed up like the mystery van or something, or is it just like a white van that happens to be parked at some place?
No, it's very clear that it's a health department van. But the other thing that I want to help people understand is that just like you get your cholesterol tested regularly to make sure that it's in healthy levels, if you're a sexually active adult, you should be getting STD testing on a regular basis. And there shouldn't be a stigma associated with that. We need to start breaking down that whole stigma associated with STD testing so that we can get more people who want to come in for the testing, so we can decrease the amount of people who have STIs, so we can decrease the rates.
Okay, so do you have a question or a comment about the Zika virus in San Antonio, teen pregnancy, STDs, obesity, diabetes, other health-related issues that we have here in San Antonio? We have Colleen Bridger here with us. She's the new director of the city's health department. She's with us in the studio. She'll answer your questions and comments. Tell her what's on your mind. What do you want her to address in San Antonio as she leads the charge to deal with public health here in our community? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. The new director of the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District says her top priorities include combating obesity, diabetes, the Zika virus, teen pregnancies, sexually transmitted diseases, as well as promoting health equity. What do you want her to tackle, or do you have some ideas about the tactics on how to reach San Antonio and make some big changes, because so many of our health issues are preventable? So we're joined by Colleen Bridger, the new director of the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District. And so we've got some email questions. One email question from Roy, he's saying that what can you do to deal with on male health issues? Historically, health care services have been rather a light on male-centered care.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And we do have a fatherhood initiative through our Healthy Start program to address infant mortality. So recognizing that dads need to be part of that social support that moms need while they're pregnant and after they've had the baby to make sure that mom and baby are both healthy. And so that is definitely an area that we are learning needs to be given more attention.
And someone emailed us from Dan, where do you draw the line between public health responsibility and individual responsibility?
Yeah, we get that question a lot. And it depends on the situation, but generally speaking, if we can help make the healthy choice, the easy choice through some policy interventions and policy changes, that benefits everybody. And so it takes it out of that individual choice realm. There will always be McDonald's. There will always be opportunities for people to purchase food and eat food that isn't healthy, and that's fine. But we want to also make sure that there are opportunities for people to, for the same price, purchase healthy foods like salads and, you know, drinking water instead of sugar-sweetened beverages.
We talk about individual responsibility. You know, what is the individual? The individual is actually the sum of what is happening in the community around them. They're subjected to multi-million dollar marketing campaigns. They've been engineered in order to, consume and partake in unhealthy lifestyles. And so when you say individual responsibility, well, where did that individual actually come up with the concept to engage in some of these unhealthy behaviors? And there is a public health component to try and deal with, balance out some of the negative marketing that goes into that individual's brain.
Yeah, and we saw that a lot with tobacco. And I think people are starting to understand, you know, tobacco is still a legal product. We're not going to take that right away from people, but it's also a very unhealthy product. And so helping kids understand how unhealthy that is so they don't start smoking, restricting areas where people can smoke so that I don't have to breathe secondhand smoke. Those are all things that we can do that still allow the individual to choose to smoke, but protects the rest of us from that choice.
Okay, let's go back to the phones with Lisa. And Lisa, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you. Hi, I was calling because I'm concerned about prenatal services for underprivileged women in San Antonio. The Planned Parenthoods in San Antonio do not currently offer prenatal care for underprivileged women. How is that being addressed, and what kind of resources do you look at improving in the future for underprivileged women in San Antonio?
Okay, Lisa, thank you for the call. We sure do appreciate that. And Colleen Bridger.
So with the caveat that I've been here less than a month, I can say that making sure that women, regardless of how they're going to pay for prenatal care, making sure that they have the opportunity to get into prenatal care in the first trimester and get regular prenatal visits during the pregnancy and a postpartum visit to make sure that they have access to the birth control of their choice is a critical component to not just addressing infant mortality, but also addressing women's health. So that is something that is very critical to those issues. The specifics about who does it and how it's done, I don't know yet.
Right, but there are not plenty, but there are services that are available, and frequently many women don't know what is available to them or how to access them, or they don't have the support in order to access them. A public awareness campaign in making women aware, low-income women specifically, who may not, they're not looking at the right websites or watching listening to the right radio programs to hear what's out there. We got to figure out this is here for you, and this is here for your child, and come join us, and these things can help you. So next caller, let's go to Anna. Anna, welcome to The Source. Anna, you're on the air.
Thank you. My name's Anna Sandoval, and I run a group called the Aaron Health Collaborative of San Antonio, and we're health professionals concerned with the health impacts of air pollution. I also happen to be a candidate for city council, and I'm glad that we have a new director on board, very excited about that, and had a couple of questions. One is, how would you feel about the formation of a citizens advisory committee on health? We currently, I believe we don't have one, but we do have a very big city and a lot of health issues, as we've been discussing on the radio. And secondly, in the past, the district used to produce a health profiles report with some detailed information about the status of our community by zip codes and census tracts, and I found it very helpful. And it hasn't been available since 2013, so I'd like to know if you would consider reissuing that now that you're on board. Thank you. I'll take my call off the air.
All right. Thank you for the call.
So I'm going to address the second question first, which is we are already working on that. I believe we expect to publish those mid to late April. We're going to start with health profiles by district. So that will give everybody who lives in District 10, for example, data specific to all of the people who live there. So we recognize that that's been a little delayed over the last couple of years, and that's coming out before the end of this month. Your second question about a Citizens Advisory Committee on Health, you are not the first person to bring this to my attention. So it's on my radar screen. I need to get a better feel of how health-related decisions are made here in the city before I can weigh in on whether or not that's a good idea. But definitely know you're not alone in that question to me.
Being head of the health department, you know, we knew you want to serve San Antonio's health needs and promote healthy living, but frequently you might run into a buzzsaw trying to do so, particularly when trying to tackle probably the number one thing that we could do to improve health in the city, and that's try to get people to drink fewer sugary drinks. What have they told you? Is that been like off limits, or are you given free rein to try to take on encouraging people to stop or limit the number of sugary drinks that they consume?
I have been given no restrictions on helping people understand that sugar in drinks is easy to eliminate if you choose to drink drinks without sugar, and helping people understand that when we talk about sugary drinks, we're not just talking about, you know, soda. We're talking about some of the energy drinks. We're talking about tea. There's a tremendous amount of sugar in sweet tea. So just having people understand that when you're talking about sugary drinks, what exactly it is you mean and how they can start to replace some of the sugary drinks that they drink with something that doesn't have sugar in it.
So what are the benefits of reduction of sugar intake?
Well, sugar is not something that the human body has to have in order to function healthy in a healthy way. And when you consume too much sugar, it's really hard on your body, and it can lead to diabetes and it can lead to obesity. So that is something that we want to make sure that people understand, that sugar is not essential and too much sugar is actually toxic to the body. So they need to look for ways, and we need to help them figure out how to do that to decrease the amount of sugar that they consume every day.
We see some parents giving their children sugary drinks in the bottle and giving it to them to soothe the child, and anything to try to reduce that?
We do have a focused effort on dental health, and so there's a lot of work with our pre-K programs with the kids and the parents to help them understand that, number one, baby bottle tooth decay is a real issue, and that those baby teeth are incredibly important. They're not just, you know, temporary fill-ins until the permanents come in. They keep your jaw in alignment. They keep the permanent teeth coming in a healthy way. And so we need parents to understand baby teeth are critical to the health and development of permanent teeth as well as the child. And then when you introduce sugar to an infant or a baby at such a young age, you're setting the taste buds to expect that sugary taste. Whereas if you delay that, then they don't have that, they don't develop that need for sugar that we're seeing in many of our children.
And so you're saying that by not giving them so much sugar early on, then they won't have, I guess, their brain won't be craving it as much. And so you're not setting them up for a life of diabetes, and having diabetes, you shortened lifespan, amputations, loss of eyesight, all sorts of, and obesity, you know, everything that comes along with that. So there's a lot of good reasons in order to encourage parents not to be giving their children so many sugary drinks.
Exactly. Exactly.
Including, and then there's caffeine and all those other things that come in there. Yeah. All right, behavioral issues. All right, so we're going to continue our conversation as we come back from this break. We talk with Colleen Bridger, the new head of the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District. We'll talk more about the big issues in San Antonio, including health equity, what can be done about that. We'll take calls as well, 210-614-8980. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. You're listening to your public radio station in San Antonio, KSTX, Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies, and this is The Source. With us today is Colleen Bridger. She's a name you're going to get to know quite a bit here in San Antonio. She's the new director of the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District. Lots of issues that she's going to be tackling: obesity, diabetes, Zika, teen pregnancy, STDs, health equity, vaccinations, infant mortality. So many things. A lot of different things, just whatever you want, just pick. There's nothing, you can't go wrong with any one of those issues. Let's get back to a call. Kyle joins us. Hey, Kyle, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
I'm from England, and you can go into any family planning clinic and get as many condoms or as much contraception as you like, and it doesn't cost you anything. Why is it in America, if they want to stop unwanted teen pregnancies and all that sort of stuff, why don't they provide this stuff regardless of, you know, it shouldn't involve money. It should just involve people have made mistakes and they need to fix it. Not, it's going to cost you $50, say, for the morning after pill or things like that. For me, from where I come from, that's crazy. You can go to your doctor next day, you can get the morning after pill and it doesn't cost you anything. So why is it in the U.S. it costs to, you know, take precautions against, you know, being sexually active?
All right, Kyle, thank you for the call. And that's a big question. I don't know if we can answer why that is, but we can try to answer what services are available. I mean, you talked about when you were in college, you made condoms available in the dorms. You thought that was necessary. Here, that's not going to happen.
Well, it does happen to a certain extent. So I was, as part of being new to Metro Health, I'm going around to the various clinics and places that Metro Health operates throughout the city, and did go by the STD clinic, which is where we test and treat for sexually transmitted diseases. And I asked about condom availability, and they said, we have, you know, condoms just out in every exam room so that if people want them, they can take them. They don't have to pay for them. They don't have to ask for them. If they want them, they're there in the clinics and they can take them with them. So, you know, and that's part of it. But the caller is also referencing access to the morning after pill and just birth control in general. And that is an area where the United States struggles. It's not just specific to Texas. When I was in North Carolina, we had that same challenge. And it is a philosophical issue that the politicians debate extensively, whether you should provide those services at no charge for easy access, or whether having those services available somehow condone sexual activity. And I am not a politician, so I don't know what the answer is.
So we do have LARC, which is long-acting,
reversible
contraception. Yes, and that is something that San Antonio has been investing in for quite a while, but that program is no longer grant-funded. The grant ran out. So where are we with trying to do LARC here, especially with at-risk populations?
So let me just clarify for listeners who aren't familiar with what LARCs are. So some good examples of LARCs include the IUD, and there are five or six different kinds of IUDs that are out there, and they're great. And they work 5, 7, 10 years, and so it's a really good option for women who know that they don't want to have a baby in the next 5, 7, or 10 years. Another example of a LARC would be Implanon, which is similar to Norplant, where it's the hormone is inserted under the skin in your arm. So LARCs are something that are critically important to women's health. And you mentioned we did have a grant through the city to expand access to LARCs. That grant has ended, but access to LARCs has not. So women have access to LARCs through any of the UHS clinics, and a number of different hospital clinics have them available as well. What we need to do next for San Antonio and for Bexar County is help women understand that these LARCs are incredibly effective, very inexpensive to use if you look at an annual cost, and don't have some of the side effects that they think they might have, like IUDs had a bad reputation from the 70s. IUDs are completely different than they were back in the 70s and are super effective, even for teens.
And so how important is dealing with teen pregnancy for you and the department?
So teen pregnancy is a personal passion of mine. I did my dissertation on teen pregnancy, fought a lot of good fights in Gaston County around teen pregnancy, and I totally understand that it is a controversial issue because some people believe that teens should only talk about sex with their parents or their clergy, and other people believe that parents and clergy aren't talking to kids about sex, and so they need to get that information through other sources. I think the research is pretty clear that kids need to get critical health information from multiple sources, multiple times, because they're inundated, as you mentioned earlier, with marketing information that gives them the wrong idea about what is normal activity for teenagers with sex. So I believe that we need to get good information out there. We need to help parents and clergy know how to talk about sex, know how to answer some of those questions that didn't come up when they were dealing with it themselves. And we need to make sure that if a teenager is sexually active, she has access to birth control.
San Antonio's on the front lines of Zika. What can be done? I know you're in charge of the vector control, which is our mosquito control issue.
So, yes, we are very cognizant of the huge potential for Zika to come back again when the mosquitoes come back.
Or any mosquito-borne illness. We're going to get a bunch from the tropics coming up here. We know it's happening.
Yes. So chikungunya is another example of a mosquito-borne disease that we are worried about and watching. So we do have some vector control work that happens through Metro Health, and that is a targeted approach. So it's not like we have trucks going out and spraying for mosquitoes throughout the entire Bexar County. When we know that we have some areas that have standing water that can't be disposed of, we treat those areas in order to decrease the mosquitoes. But we also need people to understand that when they're out in areas where there are likely to be mosquitoes, they can wear insect repellent, they can wear long sleeves, and make sure that they don't get mosquito bites that way.
We saw that San Antonio was cutting its vector control budget, mosquito control budget, right as the Zika outbreak was ramping up last year. But has that been dealt with?
Well, I went to my first city council meeting, and one of the items on the consent agenda was to accept $750,000 of funding to supplement Zika response for Metro Health. So we are receiving funds that have been allocated from the federal level through the state to the city in order to be able to test for Zika as well as help people understand how to prevent mosquito bites.
Back to the phones with Daniel. Daniel, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you. Very interesting topics here. One topic that I don't hear much about anywhere in the health industry and is the salt intake of all these children eating in this fast food restaurant. I know my personal experience as an older adult, we have many illnesses, and one of them is high blood pressure. And the salt intake is recommended for us to reduce it. But as these young children are going to these fast food restaurants, they put so much salt, mainly on the fries, that their taste buds crave for that salt at a young age. And I feel that something should be done about that to try to control that much salt for these children, because when they get to adult age, they develop high blood pressure. If they do, they, you know, this could contribute to that health issue.
All right, Daniel, I got it. Thank you for your question. Salt intake, that hypertension, it's a deal.
It is a deal. And we know that more than 75% of the salt that Americans consume comes from processed or restaurant foods. So a lot of people, when their doctors tell them to reduce their salt intake, they think that that means they need to remove the salt shaker from their kitchen. And that's not really where the majority of people are getting their salt.
But things like Takis, you know, these little high-flavored corn chips, that's you know, they're not made with gasoline, according to the meme that's out there. That's not true, but they do have a lot of salt. So, yeah.
And that's one of many items that you don't even know that it has salt on it. It's not like even the French fries where you sprinkle the salt on it. It's mixed into it. You can't see it. All you can do is taste it. And it goes back to what we were saying about sugar. If you don't expose young children to salt, then they don't crave that salt and they don't think that that much salt is normal. But we also need to help the restaurants do a better job of weaning our taste buds off salt, because it is a contributor for high blood pressure.
Now, San Antonio has several programs that are really popular, like Ciclovia. You know, you had your first one. What did you think?
It was amazing. Oh, my gosh. There were 83,000 people there. And it was incredible to see all the people out having fun on the street, riding their bikes, walking, pushing strollers. It was my husband and I were. I had to do a little talk at the beginning, and as we were walking from one end to the other, I looked at him and I said, "What an incredible city we've moved to!" It was just a really neat experience.
And so, more Ciclovias under your
absolutely.
Leadership?
The YMCA runs point on that, and we help where we can. But it's an incredible, incredible experience.
All right. Well, this is our new head of the San Antonio Metropolitan Health District, Colleen Bridger. Hopefully, we'll have you back here on The Source frequently, because public health is always at the top of things that we want to talk about here on The Source, and we appreciate that. And we'll talk about diabetes, obesity, Zika, teen pregnancies, STDs, health equity, infant mortality, all these big issues, frequently talked about, important stuff here on The Source. And Colleen, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.